This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Remember them? Sugar, honey, honey. Good morning. Welcome to Freedom Works. The Paul Molloy Show. I am Paul Molloy, along with my buddy Big Ed Davis and my partner Big Ed Davis. Thank you for joining us on this Monday, October the 23rd. And, of course, all hell is breaking loose all over the world. So we got a lot to talk about. In a few minutes, James Broll of the Competitive Enterprise Institute is going to be here. We're going to talk about their report, or its report, on regulating artificial intelligence. It's a sticky wicket to do that. There's pros and cons. But we're going to talk about all of that with him. He's an expert on it. And about how we're going to maneuver through all of this AI. So stay tuned for that just a few minutes. And the U.S. is ready to become involved in the Israeli war should Americans be targeted in the conflict. So says our Secretary of State and our Secretary of Defense. We are going to take a look at all of that. We're a very dangerous situation over there. And guess what country now tops Mexico in illegal border crossings at our southern border? You know what country it is now? We're going to tell you who it is. So stay tuned for that as well. And in our ultimate top 10, this is a good one. The top 10 celebrities that were also spies. So stay tuned for that towards the end of the show. By the way, Freedom Works, we are sponsored by Andrew's Master Barbershop, located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. Guys, the best place to go for you, for a haircut, I am telling you, it's Andrew's Master Barbershop. They are open Tuesdays through Saturdays in Dunedin in the Overcash Plaza. Call first for an appointment, please. 727-733-3773. And Arbor Life Tree Service, whether it's tree enhancement, tree growth, tree removal, stump grinding, if it has to do with trees, Arbor Life is Tampa Bay's premier tree service. They worked for me, and they did a wonderful job at a great price. Call them today for a free estimate, 727-330-1999. So we got a lot going on. Needless to say, the Israeli war is still front and center. And senior American officials say the United States is poised to become involved in the war should regional forces intentionally target American personnel. Now, Anthony Blinken, our Secretary of State, and Lloyd Austin, our Defense Secretary, said yesterday that the U.S. expects Iranian proxies to seek opportunities to escalate this war, and they asserted that the Biden administration is ready to respond accordingly if American civilians are harmed intentionally. So we're getting very, very close to a very, very dangerous situation. Here's Blinken. He said, this is not what we want, not what we're looking for. We don't want escalation, he said. We don't want to see our forces or our personnel come under fire. But if that happens, we're ready for it. Austin added that what we're seeing is a prospect of a significant escalation of attacks on our troops and our people throughout the region. And we're going to do what's necessary to make sure that our troops are in that position and that they are protected. Does it sound to you like all of a sudden, perhaps the Biden, perceiving that they have been tagged as being rather weak in our foreign policy, are now like a wounded bear, sort of lashing out?
Well, when Obama was perceived as weak, he used to shake his finger. Don't do that. He'd shake his finger.
Yeah.
Remember that? I remember that.
Yeah? Yeah, I kind of remember that. What was that? Oh, I know. And now, the magic word for us is don't.
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 No, four don'ts. Is it three or four don'ts?
That's three or four don'ts.
Yeah. I have one word for you. Don't,
yeah,
don't,
one word.
Don't.
Yeah. When it comes to thinking about doing anything against the United States, don't. Now, we do have those warships in the Mediterranean. We have two of them now. And so we are kind of, what's the word?
Well,
we're sticking our chin out.
But now
sticking our chin out.
But now over the weekend, he's backtracked. Biden has said that Israel needs to think long and hard before they do an invasion. You know, listen, when we had 9/11, when it was 9/12 and Bush said, either you're with us or you're against us, I didn't see any wavering there.
Right.
You know, and now all of a sudden Israel's like, oh, I thought you had our back. Now you want us to think about it, or can we have a cup of coffee or something? Or,
well, you know, wasn't he saying that Biden was saying about thinking long and hard about invading until we did everything we could to supposedly get the hostages that we have there out? Now, they're not going to, you know what? Netanyahu and Biden are not that close.
No, they're not.
Trump was closer to Netanyahu. So I don't know that Netanyahu, in the midst of all of what's going on, then they got Hezbollah in Lebanon, just north of them, just over the mountain range.
Yeah.
So they got that to worry about now, too. So I don't know that, I think Netanyahu is going to do what he thinks Israel needs to do.
They're tired of it.
They're tired of it,
you know, and they don't want to deal with it anymore.
No, that's right.
I mean, what did we do with Al-Qaeda and ISIS? What did we do? We eradicated them.
That's right. That's what he says they're going to do to Hamas. Now, here's an update on the figures in this war. At least 5,700 people total have been killed in the Israeli war. That includes about 1,400 Israeli civilians and soldiers, and 32 Americans. Now, Hamas-run Gaza Health Ministry says they've lost about 4,400 Palestinians and more than 13,500 have been wounded. And we say that there are at least about 10 Americans that are among the 200-plus people that are being held hostage.
Well, you know, we're dealing with American hostages. The fact is that what it was not even a month ago, didn't we deliver $6 billion to Iran in exchange for hostages?
Yeah, and now supposedly we're running the money through, I think it's...
Yeah,
I know.
And I'm not scalping the tickets.
Supposedly we haven't released the money yet.
When we go to the stadium, we don't scalp the tickets. The tickets are $1. And this pen to write on the ticket is $400.
Okay.
That's how you get around it, right?
In other words,
the money's not for hostages. It's for other things.
Oh, that's right. But you know, what I'm saying is they haven't
released Christmas presents for the kids and stuff like that.
We know that as soon as they get their hands on it, Iran will spend it any way they want. But
we trust them. We trust them to do with the money.
Well, there's been some pressure on them not to release the funds. And Qatar, I think, is one of those countries in the Middle East is holding, is the one that's you're going to make a decision on. Anyway, it's a mess. Let's face it. And we've been funding Iran in many ways. We certainly have. All right, let's take our break. When we come back, James Brohl is going to join us from the Competitive Enterprise Institute. We're going to talk about their report on regulating artificial intelligence.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Men, when it's time for your next haircut, if you don't visit Andrew's Master Barbershop, then you won't get the best haircut in Tampa Bay. First off, their staff consists of the best barbers you're going to find. They'll give you exactly the cut you want. Second, you won't find a better haircutting environment. Sparkling clean, modern, and comfortable. And third, the price. They beat any of those expensive hair salons, and seniors get a terrific discount. Andrew's Master Barbershop, it's located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. That's on Overcash Drive, just north of State Road 580. It's open Tuesdays through Saturdays, and you just call for your appointment at 727-733-3773. That's 727-733-3773.
Arbor Life Tree Service is Tampa Bay's finest tree service company. From trimming, pruning, fertilizing, and insect control to grinding and removal, you get an experienced, ISA-certified, and veteran-owned firm that can do any tree job, large or small. With our fully equipped fleet and trained crew members, we care for trees of all sizes, whether you're government, contractor, business, or homeowner. Don't trust just anyone with a chainsaw. Call Arbor Life Tree Service at 727-330-1999 for a quick and free estimate. That's 727-330-1999. Arbor Life Tree Service. They go out on a limb for you.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
We're back. Freedom Works Monday. Thank you for being with us. Delighted to have James Brohl join us. He is a senior fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute, and he specializes there in deregulation and innovation. And he is the author of a report by CEI, Rules for Robots, a Framework for Governance of AI. James, welcome to Freedom Works.
Here.
Yeah, our pleasure to have you. So, you know, this whole situation with artificial intelligence, it scares a lot of people. It really does. You hear this talk about all of a sudden this robotic artificial intelligence might start controlling people, all kinds of things. So here we are, you know, kind of on the cusp of having artificial intelligence start to seep into all kinds of things in our culture. And the idea is, how do we regulate it? So tell us a little bit about what is the path and what is what does the report from CEI talk about when it comes to a way to regulate AI?
Sure. So in many ways, it's unfortunate the way this whole debate has kind of got launched in Washington, D.C., because there's the loudest voices in this debate are many of these commentators from internet blogs who are claiming that artificial intelligence could lead to Terminator kind of scenarios where the robots take over. And while I wouldn't say that those concerns are completely unfounded, they're certainly longer run concerns that are at a minimum a few years out. The technology does not exist for anything close to that at the moment. But at the same time, there actually are legitimate risks posed by artificial intelligence in terms of misinformation online, discrimination in hiring decisions or in law enforcement practices, and a whole host of other areas. And one of the things I wanted to do with this report was really just say, look, we have about 100 years of experience with regulation in this country from all the different regulatory agencies that have popped up over the last century. And we have a pretty good idea of the kind of evidence that needs to be brought to bear to justify new regulations. And the AI debate is just completely detached from that, and it's grounded in a speculation and hysteria. And I just wanted to bring more reason to this debate.
Indeed. And you have proposed a set of considerations for people that are going to shape the policy, demonstrate a problem exists that is systemic in nature and is not going away, propose solutions likely to achieve the desired policy outcome and not too broad, and also consider alternatives
alternatives to regulation, including market-based solutions. You know, it always seems, James, that if you allow the free market to take control of things, it always seems to work out. It's when you get the heavy hand of government sometimes that you start to worry about things going awry.
That's right. So these principles that I've outlined in the paper, I didn't just make them up. They come from government executive orders and guidelines on best practices for regulation. And some of these were from the Clinton administration, for example. There's an executive order governing the cost-benefit analysis process that outlines very very clear principles for when regulations are justified. And so I outline a four-step process I think that policies should have to go through in order to be justified. And you'd really just be surprised. I've now been studying regulation for a decade or a little more in Washington, D.C., and very few regulations can pass this test. And one of the reasons is because, as you said, the market tends to do a pretty good job of solving problems. I mean, it's very common for regulatory agencies to respond and issue a regulation in response to just an anecdote. There's one event, it kind of gets some news attention. They rush out and issue a new regulation, or they're not clear about what the objective is they're trying to achieve, or they didn't consider any alternatives. They just issue a regulation because that's kind of the easiest thing for them to do, but they didn't consider whether there were less costly approaches or approaches that would be more successful.
Indeed. And also, we seem to have the tendency to overregulate, don't we? You know, like you said, a little anecdotal thing occurs, and then you got to throw a regulation in where maybe you don't need one at all. One of the things that you hear about with artificial intelligence is the loss of jobs for people rather than... But then you'll also hear, well, actually, with artificial intelligence, it might create jobs and at least keep as many jobs as people would lose. What do you know? What's the true situation with job loss?
Well, the truth is, like a lot of major technological changes, it's going to eliminate some jobs and it's going to create some jobs. So there are new jobs popping up online for prompt engineers, which are basically people who are good at writing instructions for these new AI algorithms. But at the same time, there's writers on strike in Hollywood complaining that these things are going to put us out of work because they can write a movie script in 10 seconds.
Yeah, that's true.
as good as some of the not so great writers in Hollywood. And so both are going to happen. But I think in the short term, it's going to make most workers more productive. So if you're an office worker and you can write that office memo in 10 seconds rather than in an hour, that's pretty useful. That's going to increase your productivity. And the same is true for Hollywood writers and a whole host of other professions. So I think the best advice I could give to your listeners is go learn these chatbots and these new generative AI technologies and large language models and start using them on a daily basis, because you're going to need them to maintain competitiveness in the modern workforce.
Yeah. You know, when computers started becoming more and more common, and I'm thinking, at least as I can recall, mainly like in the early 80s, we started to see the advent of the computer coming into homes and, you know, into businesses a little bit more. And people were afraid that it was going to take over and result in unemployment situations because, you know, even then, the idea that computers would do things that humans would not do as well. But the truth is, it employed a universe of people, the computer industry. So maybe that's not such a big worry. But then you think about, restaurants where they're going to, you know, you push buttons rather than have a waiter. Or maybe getting in your car and not driving it anymore. Driverless cars, that kind of thing. Should we worry about those kinds of things?
Well, I mean, if you were a company that built slide rulers in the mid-20th century, you probably didn't like it when the calculator came out.
That's true.
And so it is going to end some companies, it's going to end some jobs, and it's going to create new jobs in other areas. And this is kind of how the market works. I mean, there's a constant churn of firms going out of business. Some approaches don't work, other ones do, and they succeed. And so this creative destruction process of the market has a lot of benefits. We see a lot of innovation. We see higher incomes over time. But there are costs, and those costs fall sometimes disproportionately on certain people. And so I don't want to minimize those effects. I think we should do what we can to help people who might lose their jobs in response to innovations. But we shouldn't slow down innovation and progress as a whole. Rather, we should try to help those people where they need it and allow the market to continue innovating and raising living standards.
Right. We're talking with James Brohl. He's a senior fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute, and he's the author of the report Rules for Robots, a Framework for the Governance of AI. You mentioned some of the things that we probably have to be concerned with, our data security and our privacy, among other things. Should we be concerned that these things will become... We're already worried about privacy when it comes to computers, but should we be worried even more with artificial intelligence?
Well, I mean, facial recognition technology in particular has some scary attributes. There was a story in the New York Times a month or two ago about a woman in Detroit who she'd been identified as a potential suspect in a carjacking. And through facial recognition technology, or a face, was the face of the perpetrator was caught on camera, and it matched to a mugshot that had been of her, a picture of her like 10 years earlier for a minor crime she'd committed. And basically, it was the wrong person. They dragged a pregnant woman out of her house. There's also the issue that she was African American, and so these technologies aren't always racially equal in their treatment of individuals. And so there's some areas for concern. I mean, and their government abuse in particular. I mean, we see threats to civil liberties in other countries, places like China, where facial recognition technology is pretty widespread. And there's a lot of dangers associated with it. And so I think these are some of the areas where maybe we want to initially be looking at as far as new policy changes or even regulation in some cases. Because there are real risks involved.
Is the United States the leader when it comes to artificial intelligence?
We certainly are currently. I mean, with the Google, Microsoft, OpenAI, Facebook. I mean, these are the companies that are leading the way. These are the big tech companies, and a lot of people, you know, they're popular in some communities and unpopular in others, but there's a reason. It's because they're the leaders. They're the global leaders. Europe, really, they're focused on cracking down and imposing the heavy hand of regulation. They're probably going to pass a big AI law later this year. It's really a race between us and probably China. China really wants to be a leader in this area, and to the extent we feed our leadership and authority in this area, it's going to be picked up by other countries. And that's really one of the biggest dangers of over-regulation. We may well succeed in slowing down AI development at the big tech companies, which a lot of people might like to see, but we're just going to give that leadership position to some potentially hostile other countries or hostile non-state actors. And so I think the best option at the moment is to just let continue to our leadership in this area and monitor companies as this technology develops, for sure, but not come down with a heavy hand of regulation.
So your report, Rules for Robots, Framework for Governance of AI, is this going to get into the hands of certain government officials? How is that going to work? Just kind of publicizing it on your website or what?
Yeah, I mean, I work for a think tank, the Competitive Enterprise Institute in Washington, D.C. We have relationships with policymakers' Great. Offices and in Congress, and we have people who work at our organization who pass out our materials to people in Congress, for example, and their staffs, and we have media people who help me get on shows like this, and so I'm doing a round of interviews to promote the paper, and I'm going to do everything I can to continue spreading this message. And as a next step, I'll probably start evaluating more individual policy proposals and see, hey, do they stack up against this policy framework that I've outlined in this paper?
Indeed. Well, James Brohl, I think it's comforting
to have people like you kind of watching artificial intelligence, monitoring artificial intelligence, and maybe helping set the standard for the governance. Thank you so very much for being on with us.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Absolutely. All right, James Brohl. We're going to take our break. When we come back, guess what country now tops Mexico in illegal crossings at our southern border? We're going to tell you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Our FreedomWorks radio show has been proud these many years to be sponsored by what I think is the best men's barbershop in Tampa Bay, Andrew's Master Barbershop in Dunedin. You'll get exactly the cut you desire and get it at the best price in Pinellas County. The staff is expert in quality haircuts, and the shop is always clean, sparkling, and attractive. And Andrew's Master Barbershop is easy to get to, just north of State Road 580 Main Street on Overcash Drive in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. They're open Tuesdays through Saturdays, so men, call for your appointment, 727-733-3773. That's 727-733-3773. Andrew's Master Barbershop.
Arborlife Tree Service is Tampa Bay's finest tree service company. From trimming, pruning, fertilizing, and insect control to grinding and removal, you get an experienced, ISA-certified, and veteran-owned firm that can do any tree job, large or small. With our fully equipped fleet and trained crew members, we care for trees of all sizes, whether you're government, contractor, business, or homeowner. Don't trust just anyone with a chainsaw. Call Arborlife Tree Service at 727-330-1999 for a quick and free estimate. That's 727-330-1999. Arborlife Tree Service. They go out on a limb for you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we are back. Freedom Works. It's Monday. So, while all this Israeli war situation is going on, we're still having people crossing over our southern border, and it's no longer Mexicans that are the largest group of nationals that are coming across. You know who it is? It's Venezuela.
I was going to say somewhere in that area.
Yeah. Venezuelans now top Mexicans for the largest group of people that are arrested for illegally getting into the country.
They still have socialism down there?
They got it in spades. It's a communist country.
Imagine that. People are running from socialism.
Yeah, what a surprise. According to the latest monthly report, which was released over the weekend, U.S. Customs and Border Protection recorded 219,000 encounters of people from all nationalities between ports of entry along the southwest border in September of this year, and it represented a 21% increase. A 21% increase from the 181,000 caught in August. So numbers are not going down. They are going up. Venezuelans, they had about 55,000 Venezuelans arrested by the Border Patrol after entering from Mexico in September. Now that's more than double from the 22,000 arrests in August. For decades, Mexicans accounted for the vast majority of illegals, but the flows shifted over the last decade to Central Americans, and more recently to people from South America, Africa, and Asia.
Now, when they catch them, do they release them or do they turn them back?
Well, that's the deal. The catch and release situation, supposedly if they're bad people and they've got knowledge that they're bad, they're turned back and they're detained and stopped.
The other ones get a court date for 2025.
Yeah. Look, it's wide open. We're not doing what we need to be doing. It's crazy down there. By the way, we've got patiently waiting on our
on our phone, our Eye in the Northern Sky, Angelo Ceresi. And Angelo, I know we got a lot going on, but right now we're talking about the southern border once again. And with this war going on over in the Mideast, and what's going on in the Ukrainian war, I think it makes it even more imperative that we close our southern border, don't you think?
Absolutely. I mean, there's no reason for it to be open the way it is, especially with the war going on in Europe and war going on in the Middle East. We have to secure our borders, definitely.
So what do you think, going back to the Israeli war, I don't know if you heard earlier today, but the United States is warning, I guess, Iran and others in the Middle East, that should Americans be targeted, we, the U.S., is ready to become involved in that war. What do you think about that?
Well, if they go after American citizens, absolutely. Mm-hmm. You're attacking, when you go after an American citizen like that, you're going after America itself. And we should not be standing idly by and not protecting our American citizens,
mm-hmm.
whether they be in the military or they're in other countries being, you know, because of the war situation, targeting American citizens. There's no way that we, the United States, should back down from any of these countries.
Right. Now, President Biden supposedly is telling Netanyahu, or suggesting to Netanyahu, that he hold off on this land war, you might call it the land war, in Gaza until we can get as many of those hostages as we can out of there. Do you go along with that, or do you think Netanyahu and the Israelis need to strike now while the iron is hot?
You know, with the hostages there, especially the Americans, it's a tough call. You know, in a war, there's always collateral damage. And, you know, I mean, you can't tell the Israelis to hold back after what happened to them. And the hostages being taken. That's why they took the hostages, you know. I mean, that's why they did what they did. They're trying to hold back a land war, the Hezbollah. I mean, it's a tough call. He's in between a rock and a hard place.
Yeah, right. Now, a couple of hostages, I think a mother and daughter, mm-hmm. American, I guess they were Israeli ethnic group, but they were Americans, were released. That's about it. As far as Hamas releasing any hostages. What about telling Hamas or telling anybody that's fighting against Israel, we're going to hold off on any monetary investment anywhere?
I would
except
starve
for Israel
out.
Until you start releasing hostages.
Right. I would starve them out. No water, no food, no fuel. Nothing until you release the hostages out. And then we will talk a little bit. We're not going to talk a lot. We're going to set the standard. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
They're the ones that did the attacking.
Yeah.
Excuse me. They don't have any right to dictate to us.
Of course, you know, they're going to be starving also the hostages. And
absolutely going to starve.
So it's going to be like a two-headed sword.
So what do we do?
Yeah.
What does the world do mm-hmm. in a situation like this? I mean, you got Iran rattling sabers. You got Syria, I guess they're rattling sabers. You know, Lebanon is rattling sabers. So what do we do? What does the rest of the world do? Does the rest of the world sit back and let all this happen? Or, well, they let Russia take over Ukraine, didn't they? They invade Ukraine. What's the rest of the world going to do now?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the rest of the world is not doing anything. The only country that ever does anything is the United States.
Right, but we're in a very precarious position, too, aren't we?
Right, we are in a precarious position.
I mean, we don't want to start a third world war all of a sudden.
No, you know what we
this.
Do?
Mm-hmm.
We give them all the food, the fuel, and everything. We give them that, okay? They release the hostages, then we go in.
But,
there you go.
But of course, what is Hamas going to say? Yeah, we're going to release the hostages, and then since we're so nice about, then you're going to come in and wipe us out.
But when you give
as long as we got the hostages, you're not going to come in and wipe us out.
When you give them food and fuel and stuff, where do you think it's really going to go? You think it's going to go to the people? No,
they're not going to go to the people.
No.
If anything, they'll kill those hostages
if they're not dead already.
They're probably killed. Who knows? They probably killed some of them. You know what I mean? Look what they did. They went in, beheaded babies, did everything. These are animals. Do you think they respect life? They respect. The only reason they got the hostages there is to hold off an invasion. That's it. That's their main thing.
Mm-hmm.
And to stockpile their ammo and to set up their positions to fend off the Israelis.
Meantime, we're taking our eye off some other balls of the air, including China, the China situation, what's going on in the Ukrainian war, obviously our southern border situation.
And you got the screwball Republicans in the Congress that can't even pick a Speaker of the House.
Well, in a way, that means that we're not going to send any money to anybody, because the House has to be the vehicle for initiating any kind of expenditure. So I'm not so sure that's a bad thing.
Well, it might not be a bad thing, but it shows the rest of the world we can't even get our own
act
together.
True. No, I agree with that.
By the way, five of your constituents from New York voted for McHenry. No, I'm sorry. Who's Zeldin?
Let's see here. He's the congressman.
Okay. Yeah, that's you. Your friends from New York all voted for Zeldin.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's the one that helped those people win their seats. Those Congress people.
And our lovely Vern Buchanan voted for Donalds.
Well, I should throw my hat in the
ring. Could have just wrote my name down for crying out loud.
Byron Donalds is Florida congressman.
Okay.
He was named by GOP lawmakers on the House floor during Jordan's bid. There's a bunch of them. We've got multiple speakers. In fact, 9 House Republicans have emerged.
Can I throw my hat in the ring, too? I'm a registered Republican.
Yeah, why not?
I was going to say, why didn't they just write my name down?
Yeah.
I mean, we could do a hell of a better job than they can. What have they done so far?
Yeah,
I'll tell you what, I'd make real good use of my 3 minutes on the stand, I'll tell you that.
You know, anybody can. You don't have to be in Congress to be the speaker.
You don't have to, no.
You can be anybody.
I think any one of us can do one heck of a better job than those that are putting their names in and those that are there now.
So they're going to get together, apparently, today. I wish they would get into a room and they should lock the door, of course.
Yep. Just like they do with a papal conclave.
And they're hoping to come out with another vote tomorrow. So we'll see. We'll see if they... Yeah, like the papal... and have a little... if it's dark smoke, they haven't come up with somebody. If it's white smoke, they have.
Right.
You did it with the student council in high school, for crying out loud. We stayed in a damn room until we picked someone.
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
You think that they would get wise on that one.
Can you imagine? These are the people that are running our country.
Yep.
This is why this country is so screwed up. You got politicians that don't even know what the left hand or the right hand is doing, right? They come up with these screwball laws, right? Firearm protection. They did the prohibition with alcohol. Look how far that got them, right? Back in the 20s when they did all that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Look at all the crime they caused.
Yep.
Right? Unbelievable. And these are the people running our country.
That's
right. We shouldn't even be paying them, because they haven't done a darn thing for this country at all.
What have they done? If they're not stroking out on camera, walking off podium in the wrong direction, I don't know what the hell they're doing.
And they're taking the money that we're paying them. They're taking a paycheck.
See, I look at this whole thing as, in a certain way, it's like, government's not spending our money right now, passing new laws. Good. I'm almost thinking, because they're doing more harm than good when they're alive and well and all running around and making all the laws that they're making. How much money would we have sent over to, the Palestinians and the Iranians and the Israelis and the Ukrainians? How much more money would we have sent if we didn't have this problem in the House right now?
Hey, we ever get that money back, by the way,
Yeah, it's another thing.
Is that a loan? Or
supposed to be. Are they loans?
Interest-free?
Exactly.
You wonder. After World War II, we rebuilt Europe. We rebuilt Japan. right?
Well, we didn't rebuild Japan. I think we did help in rebuilding Europe. I think Japan was pretty good about rebuilding themselves, but that's all right. Go ahead. I understand your point.
I thought we did help.
Well, I guess we helped. Yes, we helped them. Of course we did.
You know, we went over there with them. Plan for Europe, right?
That's true.
And
for
now,
sure there.
Now we're sending money to the Palestinians. We're sending money and
food. We're sending money to everybody.
And we don't know where it goes, too.
We're sending money to the
problem is all the money that goes to Ukraine. We don't even know whose hands are going to... What you do is you stroke out a check to Zelensky, whatever his name is. He goes down to Amscot, cashes it, and then we know who's got the money.
Well, they probably do it. We're still fighting the Russians anyway, right? We know they're still fighting the Russians.
Yeah.
And the thing is, what about Europe? What about France? Germany? England, huh? What about all these countries that were supposed to help out
in
Europe?
If you were the head of any of those countries and you saw the United States spending all of the money and the effort, wouldn't you just sit back and let them do it too?
That's what it's all about.
You know.
And then, do you think anybody comes to our aid?
We should treat these countries like our parents did. Remember when you were broke and needed money? Did your parents tell you to go get a job?
Listen,
Ukraine, go get a job.
You know?
Yeah.
You want to have a war, fight the war.
First of all, we don't have any money to give them. We're printing money.
Hey, China, can we borrow some more money to give it to Ukraine?
Borrowing and printing.
And we're borrowing, right. We're borrowing money from China.
Right? I tell you.
Yeah, one breath, we're borrowing money from China, and the next breath, we're saying, they're our enemy. We got to watch what they're going to do. Why are you borrowing money from them?
I've said the dollar is no more valuable. What's more valuable right now, which one? Is it either the ink or the paper it's being printed on?
Yeah.
Because it's not the end result.
No. Well, it's always a pleasure, my friend, to have you. Thank you so very much, Angelo. You keep well, my friend. Keep your keep your eye on the alert, and we'll look forward to talking with you again soon.
Do you guys think we're on the brink of World War III?
I'll tell you what. We're closer now than we've been.
Well,
there's no question about that.
Your brother's not on today, so not today we're not.
Not today we're not.
Yeah, not as much.
Wait, come up.
Only when he's on.
That's right.
Go wake him up.
No, not today. Okay, thanks, Angelo.
Guys, take care.
All right, you too. All right, there he goes. Angelo, all right, in the northern sky. We're going to take our break. When we come back, among other things, we are going to tell you, this is kind of a good one, I think, the top 10 celebrities that were also, like during the war, they were also spies.
Guess you better slow than Mustang down.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Arbor Life Tree Service is Tampa Bay's finest tree service company. From trimming, pruning, fertilizing and insect control to grinding and removal. You get an experienced ISA certified and veteran owned firm that can do any tree job, large or small. With our fully equipped fleet and trained crew members, we care for trees of all sizes, whether you're government, contractor, business, or homeowner. Don't trust just anyone with a chainsaw. Call Arbor Life Tree Service at 727-330-1999 for a quick and free estimate. That's 727-330-1999. Arbor Life Tree Service. They go out on a limb for you.
Our Freedom Works radio show has been proud these many years to be sponsored by what I think is the best men's barbershop in Tampa Bay, Andrew's Master Barbershop in Dunedin. You'll get exactly the cut you desire and get it at the best price in Pinellas County. The staff is expert in quality haircuts, and the shop is always clean, sparkling, and attractive. And Andrew's Master Barbershop is easy to get to, just north of State Road 580 Main Street on Overcash Drive in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. They're open Tuesdays through Saturdays, so men, call for your appointment, 727-733-3773. That's 727-733-3773. Andrew's Master Barbershop.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Welcome back to Freedom Works.
our final segment of the day. By the way, we're here Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time, on the Tantalk Radio Network. Always glad when you're able to pop in and listen to us. But if you're busy, thanks to Big Ed, you can go and listen to us anytime by going to our website. Yeah, just go to OurFreedomWorks.com, O-U-R, OurFreedomWorks.com. Look at the top where the word podcast is. Click on it. Ed's got all our shows there. Most recent show at the top. You'll also know who the guest is, the topic with the guest, and our top 10. OurFreedomWorks.com. Ed, got some sad news to report. The world's oldest dog has died. Name was Bobby, B-O-B-I, in Portugal. You know how old Bobby was?
Mm-mm.
31.
Wow. Must have been a small dog. Very small dog.
Well, let's see if I can find a picture of him. He was a purebred Raffaello do Alentejo. I've never even heard of the breed.
Might have been a stuffed animal compared to me. I don't know what that is.
I'm not sure what it is. He passed away at the age of 31. Guinness World Records says Bobby died Saturday at his home in Conqueiros, Portugal. 31 years, 165 days. He ate human food exclusively. He was never leashed.
Mm. Drink beer? Smoke cigarettes?
It says, I bet he didn't smoke. He lived that long. Bobby's owner said that he was never tied up or leashed. And as he got older, he spent most of his time in the backyard of his property hanging out with the cats. Oh, they got a picture of him here. He's a medium-sized dog.
Mm.
Yeah,
like a poodle or?
No, he looks a little bit like a flop-eared, not a...
Like a basset hound or something?
A little bit like a hound.
Yeah,
a little bit. He's got a little hound look to him.
Boy, I tell you, that had to be hard because you got a dog for 15 years. I mean, and that's good. That's hard to say goodbye to that.
Oh, it's very hard to say goodbye.
You have one for 30-some-odd years? Jesus.
But then you think, my God, a dog that lived 31 years, no other dog, you know, and you rejoice at how long the dog lived.
Probably for the last 15 years, the owner kept waking up. You still around?
God. It says here that Raffaello do Alentejo dogs are medium-sized livestock guardian canines.
Mm.
They typically have a life expectancy of 12 to 14 years.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Go.
Yeah.
All right, a tip of the hat to Bobby. All right, Ed, before we get on to our top 10, which is a good one, I think, what's going on in the world of sports? How did our Buccaneers do over the weekend?
Well, I thought today's program went pretty well, and then you want to bring this up. I mean,
oh, I'm sorry. Did something bad,
right down.
Did something
yeah,
bad
they
happen?
Lost.
They
yeah,
did
they
lose.
Lost. 16-13.
Oh, it's a close game.
Yeah.
I mean,
big problem. The problem is, you know how you write down your pencil?
Who
when you see
did
the
they
schedule,
lose to, by
the Atlanta Falcons.
Okay.
When you see your schedule, you pencil in a home win against a really crappy team that's young and up and coming or getting started.
Yeah.
The Atlanta Falcons, you write that as a W.
Uh-huh.
Because now you got to go to Buffalo and play them.
Yeah.
You have to go to San Francisco and play them. I'm telling you, the next five games, if the Bucs win one of them, I'll be surprised.
But the truth is that Atlanta and the Bucs were vying for first place in their
yes, but they
division.
Both been, but they've both been playing a lot of cupcake teams,
okay.
You know.
Mm-hmm. So now that means that Atlanta's number one and the Bucs are two.
By a game, and we're not even a third way through the schedule.
Yeah, we still
have a lot of football left.
Any other news that we need to talk about?
No, not really.
Who's any? Do we have a World Series contender yet?
Is it tonight? Tonight, I think, is game six, I think.
Arizona's playing Philly in that one, I think.
Yes, yes.
Okay. Yeah. And then the other one, Houston, Texas, have we come up with a winner on that?
I don't think there is.
No. Okay. All right, Ed, it's time for our top 10. Now, these are, I went and I had to cobble this together, okay? And so these are my choices, I guess you might say, of the top 10 celebrities.
Now, we're talking real celebrities. We're not talking Austin Powers or James Bond, right?
No, we're talking about basically actors and actresses, okay? That were also spies. Not all of them were actors or actresses. You'll see what I mean when we do this. All right, here we go. Number 10. Ian Fleming. You know who Ian Fleming was?
No.
He wrote all the James Bond novels.
Oh, okay.
Ian Fleming drew on his experience as a British Nazi intelligence guy during World War II to
to write its James Bond spy novels. He concocted schemes that British commandos used to undermine the German war effort. So good for him. All right, number nine. Josephine Baker. Now, you might not remember her, but she was an African-American who moved to Paris in the 20s to escape racism. She became a huge star in France, and she was able to use that star power. She was a charming, charismatic woman. She would gather intelligence from tipsy German officials. Okay, there you go.
Did she get them liquored up and get them to spill their guts?
Yeah, she wrote secret notes in invisible ink on her sheet music and hid messages in her clothes. All right, number eight. Here's another one I'm sure you don't know, but his name was Mo Berg. He was a Major League Baseball player from 1923 to 39. He was a backup catcher, but he excelled in languages. He could speak seven languages. During World War II, he joined the Office of Strategic Services, that's the predecessor of the CIA, and recruited foreign scientists to work in the U.S.
Well, he used Astros. He could use them to steal signals.
Yes, he could do that pretty well. Number seven, the actor Sterling Hayden. Have you ever heard of Sterling Hayden? He was a big-time actor in the 50s and 60s.
No.
He was in Dr. Strangelove, and he was in The Godfather. Anyway, He was a covert operative for the U.S. government during World War II. He was working for the Office of Strategic Services. All right, number six, Julia Child. Julia Child,
wow.
Yeah, the famous cook. She worked for the OSS during World War II. Can you believe that?
I pity the person had to listen to her.
Yeah, but she was she assisted with research on a number of projects before taking on a bigger assignment, cooking up a recipe for shark repellent.
I mean, she had that voice that was up there with Fran Drescher.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I remember.
That'd be all right.
All right. Number five. You remember Harry Houdini?
Yeah.
You ever heard of him? As he performed in Germany and Russia, this is in the years leading up to World War I, he would take note of troop movements and military equipment, filing regular intelligence briefings with London. Mm. All right, number four, Greta Garbo. Mm. Greta Garbo was the greatest silent film actress, and also in the early talkies. After her retirement, many thought it was an excuse in 1935 when she retired to cover up her work as a spy for the Allied forces. She used her celebrity status to identify Nazi agents and report on their actions. Number three.
You got a minute.
Oh, really? Got a minute?
Mm-hmm.
Marlene Dietrich. Remember her?
Mm-hmm.
All right. She was a German-born volunteer to help the OSS. Number two. Frank Sinatra.
Spy?
According to his daughter, he became a secret dispatcher for the CIA, transporting individuals secretly in and out of the nation. And finally, number one, Cary Grant.
Wow.
Two authors alleged that he worked for the FBI and British intelligence in helping ferret out Nazi sympathizers in Hollywood.
Hmm.
There you go. Thank you for listening. We'll be back on Wednesday. Remember, freedom works.
WTAN, Clearwater.
FM 106.1.
WDCF, Dade City.
FM 106.1.